This is the Amp Hour Podcast, recorded November 14th, 2011. Episode 69, Quasading Quadcopter Quantophrenia.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gamble from Chris Gamble's Analog Life.
I'm a bit pissed off this morning, Chris.
Oh, so normal Australian morning?
Is that pretty much.
Have a cup of coffee, swear at Americans, have a bowl of Cheerios.
No, but there was lots of swearing, though. There was.
Okay. What happened?
A ton of swearing. I went out to the lab and I closed the door behind me, as you do. Except
old lab, new lab. What are we doing?
This is the garage. You know.
The garage.
Yes. And foolishly, for some reason, my thumb was in the door jam when I closed the door.
Oh, yeah, that'll start.
There was more swearing than a drunken sailor, let me tell you.
Sagan learned some new words today, huh?
Yes.
Even though he's three rooms over and he's napping.
He heard him. Oh, boy.
Oh, man.
Yikes. Oh, boy. So, being the professional that I am, soldiering on. And doing the show.
You're soldering on? You're soldering what?
Soldering on.
Yeah, just cauterize that wound with a soldering iron and you'll be fine.
Yeah. Nothing you can't fix with a bit of solder.
There we go.
Yep. Oh, man. So, yeah,
if I suddenly
bleat out, son of a, then you know what it's about. So,
I'm
going to take my aggro out on someone or something, I'm sure. On today's show.
Oh, cool. I bet that'll be me. Because why not, right?
Yep. And so that was my morning, and I just got back from putting the deposit check on my new lab.
Ooh, all right. Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
I thought it was already went through, though.
Well, it's a lengthy, drawn-out process. I signed it yesterday, but that doesn't mean diddly squat. Now I've paid a deposit, and it still doesn't mean diddly squat, because I don't think the other people have signed it yet, and that's all.
Yeah.
I don't know. It'll probably take another month to move in. So.
Yeah. I'm going through my own stuff for a refinance, and so I've been the plumber and the electrician lately. I've been the painter.
So you have to actually do up your house to get a refinance. What's the
story? You don't have to. I just am because I'm hoping to get. I hope they look at my house and be like, "Ooh, it's worth so much more than you paid for it."
Right.
You know, the true American. And then I'll borrow against that money and then
of course. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Get a triple mortgage. Come on, you.
There we go. Yeah.
Yep. That's the way. Man. That's the American way.
Yeah. I always wonder about that, like if I did have a lot of money in my house and I wanted to start like an electronics business. You know, you always see that. It's like always so stereotypical, like in TV and everything. People, I leveraged the house and I started this business and I was all on the line. It's like, do people really do that much anymore? I'm sure it happens with small businesses, but I don't ever hear about it.
Only the stupid ones, because the smart ones are bootstrapping. Only the idiots go and borrow $200,000 or something and then go rent a place and pay, you know, all that sort of, you know, all that big business, open like a retail shop front and all that sort of stuff where the risks are just huge.
Yeah.
But smart people like engineers that listen to the Amp Hour, they know to bootstrap it. You know, start off small from your garage with zero overhead and never borrow money for a business. Rule number one.
Yeah.
Guaranteed failure.
I think there are times to borrow money, but maybe not that.
Maybe not a storefront, that's just crazy.
Definitely calculation. That's the important thing is calculating it. Yeah.
Right.
Man.
Anyway, once you're established, if you've got an established business and then you want to mortgage your house to borrow some more money because you know it's going well and you know the money's going to work, you know, with 99% certainty, then, you know, it's a good risk.
But yeah.
No, I see it all the time. All these people, they borrow this money, and they think that they have to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to start a business, and it's just madness. Anyway, one of my pet peeves.
I wonder how many engineers end up starting business. I've never seen real statistics on that. I'm sure they're out there somewhere.
No idea. Yep.
But I think engineering mindsets are set for it, but I don't know. Maybe not.
I think the percentage of the garage engineer is high, though, compared to other other professions. I think the garage engineer is, you know, quite a garage startup
kind of stuff.
Yeah, yep. The garage startup in your spare time while you're still doing your full-time job. You burn the midnight hour, hence the term midnight engineer. You know, you're a midnight engineer because you work at midnight, you have a day job, and that's what you do. So,
and you're tired.
Yeah, exactly. Engineers don't need to sleep, do they?
No, I don't do it very often. I don't know about you, right. But yeah. You have a kid, so obviously you don't.
Yeah, right. You'll learn, son.
I know. Yeah,
anyway, whatever. Do we have shout-outs? No.
No shout-outs, but we have some news. And
news?
Speaking of
this
sleeping.
Is lame. Come on.
This is not lame.
This is lame.
This is good. No. I like this. I like this a lot. So Eddie Hagler wrote in, and he just got his technician license, so congrats to him. He is now officially a ham.
Well done.
But basically, he was telling me how easy it is, and I still haven't gotten mine, obviously. You know, I've been doing some other things, like I said.
Yep.
Slacking, mostly, and fixing up my house.
See, you haven't been burning the midnight oil. There's your problem.
No, I have been. It just, you know, I've had into my elbows in sewage.
I know. You're up in all sorts of stuff, which we won't get into. Yeah.
Right. But he challenged me, and I like it.
Oh, you like a challenge,
yes.
Do you?
Yes, I do. So here's what we're going to do. And no, Dave's supposed to agree with this, but we're going to get him to capitulate online today.
Here's what was suggested, folks.
Oh, here's what's suggested. So basically, I helped him along with the idea. Basically, he challenged me to get it by the first week or two in the new year. We haven't set an actual date yet, but for me to get my license, because he's saying that that's easy. And I'm saying that if I don't – what he suggested is that if I don't do it by a certain date, then I have to sing the Waltzing Matilda, which is some Aussie
It's
song.
A stupid Australian poem. Yeah.
It's a poem. Okay.
It's
poem, put to music,
yeah.
Though, isn't it?
It often is, yes, but it is actually – but it started out as a poem. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Banjo Patterson.
Okay. Yep. So that would be my punishment. I have to sing it or say it on the amp hour. If I do go through with it and I get my license, then I get a hearty congratulations and I move on my way with my call sign and I'm a ham, yada, yada, yada. But
up until
I was
that point, I have no problem. Well, I still
right,
do.
Obviously.
Because nobody wants to. Anyway, go on.
My idea was if I get 10 people to do it alongside with me, right? We've got maybe 2,500 listeners at the amp hour. If I get a couple of friends with me and we all get... technician licenses together, 10 of us, and we prove it somehow that Dave has to sing the U.S. national anthem on the amp hour.
Why would I agree to that? Why?
I don't know.
I just
you really
care.
Have no skin
I mean,
in the
if
game.
You want to go out and get your technician license, great, go do it. Not because I'm going to promise to sing the bloody the national anthem.
Because it's a challenge that then you have some.
I know. I don't care.
Involvement.
No, sorry, stupid. Lame. You see,
yeah, I guess the problem
is
you're not really interested in ham.
Nobody wants to hear either of us sing at all, right? So
hey,
it's a lose-lose.
I have had some songs on here. One song, I did that Chonky Product
Product. Right. Oh,
yeah.
You think you're a bit of a goer, do you?
A goer?
A goer. That's an Australian term. You think you're pretty good.
No. No. No,
being a muso
sing.
And all, right? Being in a
no,
band,
I,
you
yeah,
were in a band.
I, right? I was in a band, but no, I'm not a very good singer. But I'm saying I would do it in order to. I like the push behind this. I think it's good. I think we need to be advocates for ham because there's a from the technical side of ham. You know, like there's the other side of it. I think, you know, there's people that are interested in the communications aspect and everything, but the electronics aspect, that's what's important, I think, and. You know,
well, then we encourage it. It doesn't have to be some silly yeah, contest. Give me a break, which nobody wants to see one in quote marks, because no one wants to listen to either of us. Just lame. Sorry.
Well,
by
I
all
like
means,
it. If
get
people
your 10
like
people
it,
together. And
if people like it, then we'll pressure the hell out of Dave, and maybe we get something. Maybe there's something he'll come up with on the other side of it. So
no, look, if you go through and get your ham license with Chris, we'll give you a shout out on the Amp Hour.
Yeah. In musical form, Dave?
Nah, sorry. Moving on.
All right. Moving on.
I've got
if
a couple
like
of
it,
things
us,
to be pissed off about.
You do. You got some
other
stuff.
I've got at least two rant items on here.
Every time you add stuff, it's usually angry stuff to the list, Dave.
Yeah, especially this morning with this thumb is throbbing, well, let me tell you.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Man, it's stinging.
Yeah.
Whew. All right, suck it up.
Ah.
Yep.
Ah.
Anyway, if you've seen my latest video.
I have. I liked it.
Yes. I measured 1,000 resistors. Well, I measured 2,000 resistors. Actually, first 1,000 worked just fine. Then I uploaded the data with my Agilent U1272A multimeter. Let's name the bastard. Okay.
Yep.
And the first 1,000 worked fine. I tested my 1,000 at 1.5 seconds per resistor. I think that's pretty darn efficient, but we'll get onto that.
Yeah, I saw that.
So I loaded my first 1,000, no problems. Uploaded the PC. Measured my second 1,000. Tried to upload them at fail. And yeah, the software just refuses to load in any more than the first couple of data points.
Yeah.
Bloody ridiculous. Anyway, I was pissed off, so I threw the meter on video and said a few things. And then I haven't looked at it again, but I'm going to eventually solve it. It was just late in the day. I wanted to finish my video and then it just screws me around like that. I hate tools that don't work.
I know.
You know?
You should have done it like that. There was an article on Hackaday a couple days ago. Some guy added RS-232 to his multimeter. He just tapped in and did it himself. He did it on a $4 meter, though. None of that. I don't know how much a 1272A is.
Yeah, it's about $350 or something.
Yeah, this was
$4. All the more reason to expect the damn thing to work.
Well, yeah.
Bloody hell. It's all this software shit. Never works.
It's free, right?
It comes with a meter. Yeah, it is. Yeah, you don't actually have to pay. Well, you pay.
No, I mean, software is free. Bits are free, right?
No, bits are free. Right? Yeah, it doesn't actually cost you anything. Yeah, right. That's the big illusion, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like time
is free.
The first
couple hundred
you know?
Bits are free, and then the to make those bits go in the right order, then it's a little more expensive to make it look good. Yeah.
Then it's a couple hundred bucks an hour, right? Which is on our list somewhere down here. Which we'll get to eventually.
Yeah.
We won't segue into that now because I haven't finished ranting.
Oh, keep on going, buddy. Keep the train going.
Yeah. And the second one is someone has ripped me off. They have. Oh. My PCB tutorial.
That's their lost.
The PCB tutorial I've got out.
How did you find this?
Years.
How did you find this?
Somebody emailed me.
Searching for yourself?
Oh. No. Somebody emailed me and said, hey, do you realize this mob's ripping you off? Anyway, I'm going to name them. Okay, I haven't confirmed this with them yet. I haven't confirmed, but I do have a screenshot which shows that they have removed my copyright information from my PCB tutorial. You know, it's got a front page and it's got all my name and my web address and copyright and all that sort of stuff.
Like overlay like a smiley face over your face and then like
right. No,
vocode your voice.
And... They just blanked it out completely. No attribution.
Oh my God.
No copyright. Yeah. Anyway, it's the Tyne Metropolitan College in England. They're a technical college or something like that. Bloody Poms.
Yeah.
Yep. So not happy at all. I'm waiting for the guy. I don't actually have a copy of the document yet, but he sent me a screenshot. And
can you go back to this Bloody Poms? What does that mean? Is that some kind of cultural
bloody
slur
poms.
That you shouldn't,
yeah,
be,
poms.
Shouldn't
we,
be saying
we
online?
We actually call them Poms. The
it's like
English
an okay
are Poms.
Thing to say online? Okay.
That's just what we call them. They, you know. Yeah, they're
I'm sure they have
poms.
Words for you
and
too.
If they do something stupid, they're bloody poms, you know. Or
nice.
If they beat us in cricket, then they're bloody poms.
Boy, you Aussies are just so whimsical. You get names for everything.
Yeah, oh, bloody oath. Yep.
Oh, boy.
Anyway, not happy with the Tyne Metropolitan College in England. God, is it too much to ask? Just to, you know, like I actually stayed on there. You know, this, you know, free to copy for educational use, you know. But that doesn't mean remove my copyright and my name and everything. Like attribution, you know, it's all I want. It's not hard.
Yeah, seriously. People shouldn't want to take credit for what you do. I mean,
it's just stupid. I don't see the advantage.
Have to start talking like
you. Yeah. What, they don't want their students seeing where the document comes from? They want to think it's written by their illustrious instructor, you know? Give me a break.
Oh, this is a written document? Okay. Oh, the PCB document. Okay.
Oh,
I know
what
you're talking about now. Yeah.
What did you think
this
I was talking
your,
about?
This is your old one. I thought you were talking about some video.
Oh, no, sorry. No, this is the PDF.
Yeah, that's,
I've
That's a good PDF. We should link people in. I think we've talked about that once before.
Yeah,
but we should
it's
link
massively
people into that.
Popular. It's downloaded like a million times or something. It's crazy.
A million times.
Huh? Yep. Anyway.
Cool. Cool.
Yeah, so there you go. They're my two rants for today. Not happy. Anyway,
oh, sure
I wanted to get back to the Agilent thing, the Agilent meter. Like, if you've seen my latest video, I made this sort of semi-automated jig, you know, and I got it down to 1.5 seconds per resistor test time. You know, that was, I got it down from like 7 or 8 seconds or something down to 1.5 seconds. And I think you reach that threshold where you're sort of, you know, if you try and tweak it anymore, it's very, you know, there's a lot more work involved to get it down to a second, you know, from like a second and a half that I've got down on average, down to, say, a second or half a second is, you know, orders of magnitude more work. Law of diminishing returns, yep. And, and everyone said, oh, why don't you just quickly lash up a, you know, a little motor with, you know, little cogs which drive, you know, drive the bandolier of the resistors along and then the probes can come down. It's like, well, the devil's in the detail, you know. It took me like half an hour to build my little jig to, you know.
Also, Dave wanted to go eat lunch or something. So, yeah,
exactly. I didn't want to spend a couple of days building an automated
tweaker. I have a sandwich waiting and
Because if you've ever tried to build stuff, those automated type of test jigs, they're tricky. They can, there's a lot of tweaking involved.
Yeah, I like your point about that.
You
made a good point about how that is a big part. I mean, just having, being able to test your own stuff. I mean,
yep.
If you're not, especially if you're not a big company with like incoming inspection and everything like that, you can really, you need to do that kind of thing. Or even if you're doing a product test, you need to be able to replicating tests is very important in order to have consistent results.
Yeah, and if you're not, if the listeners don't know, haven't seen the video and don't know what we're talking about, I mentioned that it's very common in the electronics engineering business to have to build your own custom little jigs like this to do, you know, not test 1,000 resistors, but, you know, test a PCB or test, you know, something else, characterize something, you know, or it's a very common skill to have to build some sort of one-off automated jig for something. So I'm sure you've done it, Chris, being in the test. Yeah, it's, you know, I've done it at, I think, every job I've ever worked at. So, you know, I don't know whether or not it's just
what, common?
It is very common in my experience. Yeah, so, you know, so you get all these beginners, what is it like in the industry? What do you have to do, you know? And this is one of the things you have to do. It's very common. So,
especially in manufacturing situations too, where you have higher volumes.
Yeah,
that's a big thing. That was always what confused me, like I've talked to people before who work at like you know, even just consumer type things, like someone I knew worked at a faucet plant, right? It's like, well, what the hell does an electrician or electrical engineer do there? Well, it's like, well, they need to be able to test something in the manufacture of that, and there needs to be custom rigs, and you can outsource all that stuff, but
oh, you can. That's common too, to outsource it. There's lots of companies which will build you a turnkey automated test jig, but
Sometimes you just need
something in a day, you know, or we need something by the end of the week, you know, you just do it yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, very common.
I was showing someone today, have you ever seen a flying probe machine?
Oh, yes, they're very cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll try and find a video of those. I was showing to someone, to a young engineer today, and he was just like in shock about it. And really, it is shocking if you look at it. I mean, if people have never seen it, it's basically like, it's like you have two probes, like you're using a DMM or something like that.
Yeah,
and basically
really sharp, thin
really,
probes.
Yeah, really
so they
sharp.
They can get in access and, you know.
Yeah, and like probably six degrees of freedom, probably three or four degrees of freedom.
Yeah. Because the probes need to come down to the board at almost any angle. So either not just vertical, but at weird angles to get under components and avoid big standoff, you know, high components and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah.
And so, you program in basically where you need to probe, and you can, you can do that by using fiducials on the board and which is how they do pick and place stuff too. So you line up the board and then you say, well, you know, probe one goes here, and you actually program it where it's supposed to go, and probe two goes here, and then, you know, I want to take a resistance measurement across that area, and then you can do the same thing somewhere else and measure, you know, voltage drop or whatever, and then you just speed it way the hell up, and it is so cool. It's just like, it's amazing. And really, it's like a pretty good example of robots in the workplace, of how a robot is really, to be blunt, taking someone's job, whereas someone might have sat there testing, you know, connections before. I think that's a good use of a robot, you know, like in terms of removing that labor. But,
well, it's an automated – one of these flying probes machines is an automated – well, is a way to test a is a generic jig to measure any board, whereas the stuff we were talking about before, custom test jigs, you would have like a custom nail bed that you put a fixed PCB on, and it's only compatible with that PCB.
Right, and you were talking about probe pins.
Yeah, sometimes that can be faster than flying probe, because then you can put like 100 contacts all at once, and then can test the board in one hit. So
relays and
But if they're churning out mobile phones or something, that might be how they would do it. They would build a custom test jig. So if you've ever opened a product and you see all these gold pads on the bottom of the board, you know that's designed for a custom test jig. They've actually laid out those boards and they've put all these test points on there, and then that board sits down on a pogo pin bed, a totally custom test bed, and then bang, it all tested in one hit, bang, 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 bang. Yeah. So these flying probe machines are very common in assembly houses, so that they can test generic boards when they come out. So,
right, exactly. Yep. Exactly. It's interesting with those gold pads too. I've seen them too, where they actually, you know, they might have a JTAG header for programming, but then they'll actually have a different set of gold pins, and then they actually plug in pogo pins to that thing, and then they program through that, and then they can just, they basically like make it into a slave board at that point, and you can just, you know, control the whole JTAG chain and program things and access different pins and check out different pin configurations and. Ooh, cool stuff.
And the test electronics behind these flying probe machines is quite advanced, because not only can they do things like do JTAG programming and stuff, but they can test for shorts, they can measure capacitance, they can measure insulation resistance, they can measure, you know, or they can apply voltage, they can do all sorts of things. It's they're really quite fascinating machines. Yeah, definitely. They're great.
Yeah. I've never been in a – have you ever been in like a super high volume manufacturing? I've never really seen super high volume.
By the millions, but I've designed many custom jigs for production. Probably the highest volume I've been involved in was we did 300,000 boards.
These little
preamp boards. So we designed this custom hydraulic machine. Like all the boards sat in these little chutes. So you actually load them up like ammo,
Yeah, like a cartridge.
A cartridge. So you load all the boards in the cartridge, then you slot the cartridge into the machine. It was all fully custom built just to test these 300,000 boards. And And then, you know, the hydraulics would push the board along a little sled and it would put it under the pogo pins, and then the hydraulics would pull the pogo pins down, run the test, all the automated, you know, it was all PC driven. And then once that's done, it would lift up, and then either if it passed, it would shove it into the pass bin. If it failed, it would put it into the failed bin, you know.
That
was a huge machine, you know, a lot of complexity involved in that. But it was worth it in the end. So
Cool. That's kind of the downside. I mean, like, I worked in a couple manufacturing situations now, and that's kind of what's going away with manufacturing going away, at least away from the U.S. and I'm sure from Australia too. There's a lot of issues in manufacturing too. You know, like you got to chase down a lot of bogus problems and deal with a lot of silly things. But that's kind of the stuff that you miss out on. There's actually an article in here from EE Times about China looking to move to R&D more. And it's interesting, and they're going to have the same thing. They're going to lose some of that similar expertise that they've been building up over the past 20, 30 years if they start moving into a more knowledge economy and stuff. It's just
right. It just kind of moves around. I don't see that happening much. That's been talked about for ages, you know,
Eventually someone's got to build this stuff, right?
I mean, that's right.
I think I think it ends up being like a lot of politicians see knowledge economies being like these high
salary value economies. Added. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But eventually, someone's got to make this stuff. And personally, I think that high-tech manufacturing, I think that's a great thing. But I think it's more of a politics game there when they say that kind of stuff. I think eventually the realities are it's going to go over the laborers is, you know, worthwhile. But
and then it raises the question, can they do both? Can they have both, you know, be a major power in both kind of areas? I don't see it happening much. You know, it's going to happen a little bit, but no, I see them still as the manufacturing thing because their whole culture seems to be built around that. It's, you know, it just, whereas the US, for example, is the opposite, you know? So
And India too. I mean, India's having struggles with it too. There's another article
they are.
About India, basically, something like they're predicting $400 billion in electronics imports in the next 10 years. Like, in 10 years, their electronics import number will be $400 billion a year, which is more than their oil imports will be.
Well, see, I think India have a much better chance of being the smart, you know, actually R&D type center than China does. Because India doesn't really have the manufacturing hub there. In our industry anyway, they don't really have it. So there's no component, very few component manufacturing type infrastructure
that's true.
So,
it's tough, too, when you look at these, like, big macro things, too. You know, like India is a huge country, right? And China is a huge country. It's billions of people. And it's like, well, if you say electronics is going to cure one country's woes, you're kidding yourself.
No,
you know, like, it's just some part of a huge picture. But it's funny, India, because now China's talking about getting rid of it, and India says we want it, and then the U.S. always says, oh, well, we want it, but then the business says we don't.
U.S. want both. U.S. want the manufacturing back, you know?
Yeah.
So,
And Australia says, well, whatever, you know?
Yeah, Australia says, well, we pissed that away long ago. Yeah, we've sold our soul to the Chinese, you know, a long time ago. They own all our resources now.
That's,
Yep.
Sad. Yeah. It's reality, I guess, for now. But
your
illustrious
leader is here this week.
Is he really?
Here in Australia, yes. He flew into Canberra or somewhere.
Cool.
Canberra is our state capital, is our capital.
I didn't know that. I don't know much Aussie geography, so.
Right. Well, it's halfway. Canberra, right, back in the early day, they said, well, where could our capital be? Where do we want to shove all of our politicians and have the capital? And everyone went Sydney, and the other half went Melbourne. And being Australia, we went, right, we're putting it in the frickin' centre. You know, none of this arguing shit. So they, Canberra, which was a dust bowl on a map somewhere, they, you know, chose
they
Canberra,
do that.
Right,
yeah.
We're going to put it
they
in the middle. That settles the argument. Yeah. You know, so there's our capital in Canberra. So Canberra's full of politicians, so you can imagine the jokes.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry to any listeners who do actually live in Canberra, which is actually quite a nice place. I do enjoy going
to
Canberra.
Or any listeners who are politicians, in which case...
bugger off, yeah.
Yeah, go away.
Fix shit. Yeah. Oh, boy. Yeah. Anyway, so yes, he's here. And, of course, he wants to increase his global... Here's another rant. US rant.
No.
Get your bingo sheets ready. Sorry.
No, US
yeah,
rant.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Obama's going to Darwin, which is the north end of Australia here. And he was making a big announcement. But everyone knows what the big announcement is. Big defense announcement. They're going to put more troops here. They're going to base more troops in Australia. As if their global empire of troops wasn't big enough already. And pissing off enough
Easy
people.
Dave.
No.
Easy
so they wanna,
Dave.
Because they want to intimidate the Chinese, you see. Mm. So they want a bigger presence in the Asia-Pacific region. So they're going to base more Marines here. Bloody hell.
Yeah.
Piss off, Yanks. Just take all your imperialistic world domination shit and just, take it
no,
home.
Dave.
Thank you very much.
So insecure.
Yeah,
it's interesting from a world viewpoint. I mean, like seven billion people, right? We just crossed that mark, and yet, you know, like I'm talking to you. That's kind of crazy. I know people in China. I know people in India. I know people, you know, in Korea. I know people all over the world. Germany, England. It's insane, and it's obviously very electronic centric. But
and they all don't like Americans, right?
Oh, come on.
Sorry, I had to get that in.
Yeah,
no, we actually love Americans. We just hate American government and their policies. Yeah.
Well, don't worry about that. Let's worry about electronics.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'm sure we've got some electronics on today's show.
Yeah, we do. We do.
Well, speaking about China, Shanghai, they want to...
Yeah.
Here's a, you know, there you can't blame them for not actually grabbing the ball and actually running with it. They want the Shanghai government want 100 hacker spaces in Shanghai.
Yeah.
I would actually presume it's in the Shanghai region. Right, because it's a Shanghai government, I guess the local government, right? I'm not sure how it all works there, but yeah.
It was the technology community of Shanghai, and this was a story from Slashdot that we found through Dale Doherty from Make. So,
yeah.
But yeah,
so
funding
what would they be sponsored by? How's it going to work? Are they putting up money, or are they?
Yeah, they're putting up money and space, and
wow.
And community managed and
yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it doesn't really say how much.
Then, and then handling all the legal crap behind it. Because half the problem of setting up a hackerspace is, you know, all the legal issues, you know. Whereas I guess in a country like China, they just, the government says, it's done and it's done, right? End
right,
of story.
Yeah.
They're very efficient in that way.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
That's good, though. I mean, it's...
Oh, yeah, it's great. You know, they certainly are taking the bull by the horns and saying, right, oh, we love this hackerspace idea. We're going to make 100 of them within Shanghai.
Yeah,
holy
especially if they're
crap.
All... I mean, Shanghai's pretty big, so it's
more than
10 million at least. And, yeah. I mean, I think it's one of those, like, mega cities that they talk about. Yeah.
It is. Yeah. Wow. That's just awesome. I think that's awesome, you know?
Yeah.
I can't see other countries... getting, you know, doing it to that extent. I, you know, it's hard enough to get, you know, one local council to, you know, sort of understand the idea of a hackerspace, let alone go, right, we're going to build 100 of them, you know, and then
right.
actually do it. It had never happened here. Never.
Well, and I mean, it's yet to be seen if there will actually be uptake and interest in it. I mean, it seems
that's a separate point, right? But the fact is that the government want to do it. That alone is the news, you know, really, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
And putting up money in space. Wow, you know, geez, we'd be happy
yeah,
to have
a good
one
start.
Here in Sydney where some local council or state government actually sponsored, you know, or, you know, even recognised the fact that we might need something like that.
Yeah, well, maybe it's time to start asking, you know, like, maybe
well,
that is,
the
maybe that's
guys
the thing.
In
maybe
Melbourne
that's
have been asking for 4 years and they've gotten nowhere almost. So,
yeah.
It's a shame.
Yeah, there's another interesting article from Ian over at Dangerous Prototypes about you know, China and the potential for open source hardware in China. And actually, this wasn't from Ian. This is from DP over there. But it seems like there's a lot of interest, and it seems like open source hardware could have, you know, some legs over there. Obviously, Seed Studio is already over there, so that's someone that Dangerous Prototype works with. They're the ones
yep.
who do the DSO Nano and a lot of really good open source hardware projects. So, you know, that's a good sign between that and hackerspaces. I mean, it's interesting when you start. It's such an open. Usually, hackerspaces are such an open idea, but you don't hear a lot of mention of China usually, and.
Yeah,
bringing that many more people in is really a good idea, I think. So,
Oh, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
Cool. I have I started work on my quadcopter.
You did? Oh, how's that going?
Yeah. Roger's mate of mine. We're doing this together. We're building this thing, and we're gonna.
And so you're doing it for canyon exploration,
canyon,
yep. that kind of thing.
It's going to be the world's first canyon navigating quadcopter.
So, the first quadcopter to splash down spectacularly inside a canyon.
Correct. So I bounce off the walls and do all sorts of other fun stuff. And we got our kit and we started building it on Sunday. Yeah, we
cool.
Spent a good lot of the day building it, and it was quite interesting. The kit itself, we were quite impressed by the, you know, by the instructions and just the way it was, you know, supplied, and everything was individually bagged and numbered, and, you know, it all went together quite well. We were quite impressed by that. But you know, as I was doing it, I couldn't help but think, you know, my engineering brain goes, what did they design it like that for? That looks like, you know, not an ideal way to do it and all that sort of stuff. I don't know. I couldn't be talking out my ass, but, you know, they're using fiberglass, like very thin FR4 material to hold as the base plate to hold the arms on that take all this flexion, you know, that take all this flexion force from the motors. And, it's like there were quite a few things on there. I just scratching my head going, well, you know, that's the last thing I would have chosen to.
So is it an open design? I mean, could you feed that back?
No, we can change it. Yeah, this is just, you know. Anyway, I'm sure it works and it'll fly. But we fully expect this thing to be totally different by the time we actually, you know, finish with it. It'll be
especially after you break it a couple of times.
Oh, yeah, it'll be totally custom. But we just wanted to get a kit, so it actually got us off the ground, and we can do some experimentation and then work from there. So
nice.
That was the idea. So it's coming together.
How far along are, I mean, you have this motor spinning yet? You got the...
No, we haven't, because we don't have the battery or the transmitter and / receiver yet. They're still in the mail.
Which
is another thing I wanted to talk about. I got them from a company called HobbyKing.com. They apparently own the online hobby remote control business. Apparently, you know, their prices are so cheap. You know, they practically own it. They... world domination and all that sort of thing. And it all comes from Hong Kong. And although they do have a warehouse here in Australia, but they didn't have stock of anything I wanted, so it's got to come from Hong Kong. Anyway, I thought the shopping cart was rather clever. I found myself being sucked in to their marketing. I couldn't help it. It's so enticing. What it is when you check out, you have to pay postage based on weight. Right. So, you know, if you're ordering 5 kilos worth of stuff and your shopping cart only contains, you know, 4,100 grams of stuff, then it tells you, you know, oh, look, you've still got 900 grams left. And then there's a link to tell you, well, here's all the items that you can buy that are under 900 grams. You know, so
and by the way, you have $34 left in your bank account.
Exactly. And it really, you find yourself being, oh, wow, I've got to use up that extra, you know, 50 grams packing.
Really playing on the human psyche
and emotion.
Oh, yeah.
And getting something for free. And exactly.
The engineer cheapskate.
Engineer cheapskate, because you always want to get, you know, something on. You know, it's like if you order from DigiKey, I'm paying my $30 postage, I'll throw on, you know, a bunch more stuff even though you don't need it, you know. Because you think you're getting value because you're sending more things at once. And, you know, you do get sucked into it. It's very enticing. Anyway, I thought it was very clever and I liked it. I'm sure there's other websites like that, but that's the first... I think that's the first online website I've done where it actually shows you the products that will fit, just the products that will fit within your remaining weight limit.
That's pretty cool. And, I like that.
Yeah. And then if you're buying a battery, you know, it tells you, it knows you're buying that battery, so it knows you may want some matching connectors and stuff like that. So it pops up and tells you, you may need these. And sure enough, I did. Oh, I didn't think of that.
Well, you know.
Bang. You suck some more money out of me. So, yeah, clever. Very clever.
That's interesting. It's Arduino controlled and everything, right?
I mean, it's Arduino controlled. Yep.
Okay, that's interesting. It's from a because it's going to be a control loop then too, right? I mean, there's input back into the Arduino.
Yes. There's a tilt sensor which the Arduino handles. It reads the tilt sensor and then that's what stabilizes the quadcopter and you know.
Is there any filtering?
I'm sure there's digital filtering and stuff like that.
Okay.
I don't know the ins and outs of it, but normally you could not fly one of these quadcopters. If you had to do it manually, you wouldn't be able to do it. A human couldn't actually respond fast enough to compensate for, you know, these things are inherently unstable, and it actually requires a control algorithm and, you know, software to keep it stable. So, yep. Okay. There are also... there are planes like that now. The wings are swept forward on some of these jets. These experimental jet fighters and stuff. They are unflyable. You can't fly them. They need software to be stable. So, Yeah. Oh.
So
scary.
Big for the big ones, that's a real reliability thing. That's interesting.
Yep.
I've been working on control loops lately, like analog control loops in a circuit. Right. Have you ever done any of that kind of stuff?
Not hugely, no. I'm not really into it. I've never had a need to do that of thing. I'm not a big control theory person. You know?
I'm not a big control theory person either. I'm just trying to fix a problem. But that is just like one of the most frustrating things ever. You know, it's just amplifier, and then there's, you know, feedback, and
it's
the feedback
pretty simple
is in the summing
concept, but then trying to get it to do what you want, trying to tame the beast is
not even tame it. Just figure out where the hell the problem is. That's the real. That's the thing I keep running into. You know, like I'll be like probing, right? I'll have like a DMM, and I started the DAC, right? That's a good place to start, this DAC input. And I started the DAC, and oh, okay, DAC looks fine, whatever. Go into this, you know, air amp looks fine. Then, oh, here's a problem. You know, I have this fault condition, and I find the problem. And then I'm like, oh, here it is. Then I move next down the line, and oh, there it is, too. Next down the line, oh, there it is, too. Ah, it's in the goddamn, it's everywhere. Ah. You know, like, it's really frustrating. I mean, like,
you're chasing your tail all day.
Oh, like, the worst example is, like, so this is a big control loop, right? And there's op amps in it and everything. And I look at the input of an op amp, and it's a buffer configuration, right? So the input of an op amp is like 1 volt or whatever it is. And then I look on the other input, the non-inverting input where the feedback is, or the inverting input where the feedback is, and it's like 1.2. And I'm like, oh, there it is. It's like not right. It's not right. And then I realize that it's not that op amp's broken, right? I think that op amp's broken at first, but no, it's actually somewhere else in the circuit. It's just not responding how it should be. Oh man, I'm losing sleep over this.
It's tiring. Yeah, to even think about it, let alone to have to troubleshoot that sort of. Some people really enjoy control system theory. You know,
the theory
they really get off on it.
Yeah, like Bode plots and phase margin, all that other junk. Yeah, and it's an important thing to know. I mean, it's a good thing to know. I can't say I'm very strong in it. I mean, like I said, I'm more troubleshooting side of things, but it's crazy. I lost you
for a second.
Oh, I'm dropping out. It's raining like crazy here.
That must be it. You know?
Yeah. Hopefully we don't lose the transmission, but, there is a chance I might go black, and then Dave has to, take over, and you'll have to listen to him ran about the U.S. the rest of the time.
Awesome.
Yeah. Just go.
Oh, boy. Speaking of math and all that sort of stuff, there was a thing on the forum last night I saw that, you know, somebody said, oh, electronics should be taught as a heavy math subject. And, I think you'll be struggling to find people to agree with you there, because a good majority of electronics, you can do a hell of a lot with some very simple math only, you know.
Yeah.
As I've always said to these graduates, oh, you know, they always ask, you know, oh, am I ever going to use these integrals that I learnt and all this sort of stuff? And I go, well, in 25 years, 30 years, I've never used an integral. I've never had to solve an integral. I have to know the concept, but I've never actually had to solve an integral like you do in Math 101
and you have to know it. I mean, you have to know how it works.
Triple integrals and everything else, and concepts and stuff are important, you know.
Yeah,
the concept of an integral and that sort of stuff is important, but not actually
area
solving
under
the
curve
math is,
and
how
waveforms change, that's a big one, right? Like how a square wave looks different and when you integrate it and
But the actual math itself, no, I rarely have to use anything more than Ohm's law and a couple of other basic, you know, formulas, really. All these people out there learning all this heavy math in their engineering course will be very surprised that in, you know, general electronics design, not all electronics design, some people use integrals every day. They have to solve them.
Yeah, yeah, some people are doing
high-level
simulations and other stuff. And
yeah.
But yeah,
or
I don't even
control system or really advanced control systems theory and God knows what. But
right, but I think at a certain point you get to it, like if you're doing that kind of stuff, you're throwing it into MATLAB, you're doing it numerically instead of like symbolically.
Yeah.
Or if you are doing it symbolically, there's Mathematica, which is a crazy program.
Yeah.
Oh my god, that's it's a crazy program.
So tell us what do you do in your everyday job? Let us know. Do you know when was the last time you used heavy math in some aspect of your
electronics
profession.
There's probably like 10 equations that people use over and over again whenever I'm talking to them in my experiences, you know, like LDIDT, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that kind of basic stuff.
Physical stuff. That's physics.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And but it's good stuff to know, and then you then you hack the rest. I mean, it's
not necessarily. Yeah, exactly. That's
you
right.
Figure it out. You know, you just do it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's all, yeah, exactly. It's all rules of thumb. Electronics is all, you know, it's mostly rules of thumb.
A lot of it is a hell of a lot.
Yeah.
Right. And it's interesting, too. There's Paul Rako from EDN wrote about, you know, he's written a lot about Jim Williams since he passed away. And he's scanned in this article from 1987. And it's really great about how he taught and just about like everything that, you know, like he was very hands on. Obviously, Jim Williams was.
Yeah.
But my favorite part was about equations too. And he says I'm sure Einstein was able to look up anything in the library while he was looking up his theory of relativity, which is true.
Yeah.
I mean, like he didn't need to memorize everything because he could look it up. And it's more about the. It's not about the stuff that you memorize and need to be able to regurgitate. Yep. It's taking that and bending it and recognizing it, and that's really where it's.
Yep.
If you're good at that stuff, then you're a friggin' magician. You know, you're Harry Houdini with equations.
That's why I hate job interviews where I've been at a couple of job interviews where they'll ask you to, you know, actually solve stuff like that on paper, and it's going. Jeez, dude, I haven't done that for 20 years. Like, as if I remember how to do that. And like, and then they think, oh, well, you failed because you don't remember how to all these formulas. Well, God, no, yeah. I haven't used them for 20 years. Why do I have to remember them? They're in a book that's right next to me. I can just
look it
up.
They're in Wikipedia.
You know, yeah. It's like, I hate people who do that.
That'd be really funny if at the end of the interview you pull out a question for him. You know, like, mm-hmm. I need you to solve this problem. Yeah.
Yeah.
At the end of a really bad interview. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. And you know, you just don't want the job anyway. Yeah. You really have fun with it. Yep.
Yeah. I interviewed someone recently, and they brought in a circuit board. I was thinking about you, Dave. I was thinking about your
excellent.
I'm not sure if he's a fan of yours or if he's just a bright kid, but definitely.
Fantastic. That's my number one.
Yeah, that's a great tip.
I
love that
tip. Bring your own stuff to the interview. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was actually pretty recently, and you know, he was like just rude.
What happened?
Oh, it went great.
Did you ask him about it? Was it cool? What sort of board was it?
Oh, about the boards? The boards themselves were great. I mean, I was just going to point out that I love talking to people who are excited about electronics, like just trying to capture that feeling. You know, it's kind of like talking to you, like you and I talking, and it's just like, because I geek out all the time about stuff, right? You know, I enjoy electronics. I think stuff's cool in electronics. But if I turn to my wife or a friend and, you know, I start explaining it, they often kind of just say,
it's not
okay. Okay. Yep. But when you have someone else who's like a kindred spirit, you know, they're like, and that's a lot of our listeners too. They geek out about this stuff, and it's just nice. You know, it doesn't happen often. So we got to stick together, man. We got to stick together. it's yeah. You find those people, cherish them. Cherish them.
So, did he get the job?
I don't know. Maybe I'll tell you in the future.
Oh, right. Okay. But he would have been way up the list, right? He would have scored big points for bringing his own stuff in. Yeah.
Bringing stuff in, big points with me. Yeah. I'm not sure if it's for everyone, but definitely big points for me.
But if you bring your own stuff, make sure you can talk about it. I've mentioned this somewhere along the line, but I had one guy bring in his thesis project. And I thought, fine, I'll ask you some questions about it. He couldn't answer one of them. I think he paid someone to do his thesis project for him. It's like... And like, it's right here. I even gave him the copy of the, you know, like I was actually reading through the report thing, and, you know, it had schematics in there, and I was asking him. So I even handed it to him and said, explain that paragraph that you wrote, you know, and he couldn't. And it's like, holy crap, you know. And
was that
because
you,
I knew
was
this
that
guy,
you?
I smelt bullshit as soon as this guy walked in, you know. You could just smell it.
It's like the opposite of knowing like a kindred spirit. You know exactly when there's a phony, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, yep. Uh-huh. Yes. He came in as a microcontroller expert. Oh, fine. Okay. An easy question. Name me two microcontroller manufacturers. You know, easy question. Right?
Yeah.
Couldn't even get one, you know.
And he wasn't like nervous and clamming up.
No. He was just a loser.
Full of it. I had talked to someone about that. I was talking to someone at a conference, and he said he wrote papers for someone. Like, he would just do their master's projects for them.
I've done that once. I won't do it again. Yeah, I'm serious.
Oh, that's horrible.
I actually designed their circuit for him over lunch. He shouted me lunch, and I designed his... Because it was something I enjoyed doing, you know? It was a scope. It was a digital storage scope. So I designed him a PC-based digital storage scope over lunch, you know? I drew the thing on the back of the napkin and the whole lot, and I did some... You know, I told him you have to research this and, you know, explain this, and told him what to put in his thesis project, and yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I think this was a little more extensive. But yeah, I bet, right?
Yeah. But, you know, it was easy stuff for me, and I just enjoyed doing it, so I did it. But, yeah, I felt bad about it afterwards. I thought, that guy's going to go nowhere. But anyway, that's his problem, you know, so...
Yeah,
he was not going to make it anyway. You know, if he tried to do it himself, he was just the type that didn't care. You know, so those people just end up
in management, in charge of you, Dave. Yeah,
in charge of me.
I mean, that's
the
problem, right? I mean,
it is. I know.
Yeah, man, that's no offense to the managers out there. I mean, sometimes there's good managers,
some of them are good.
But
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like that kind of thing. They just sit there and they don't do much work for a while, and they start to. Tell people what to do because they don't know how to do it themselves. I mean, that's crazy. I was so surprised when I talked to this person about it, and he said it was a couple Indian students who were just looking to get their engineering degree so they could go into management eventually.
Yep.
And man, that's crazy. Who does that?
I know. I don't understand why you do engineering if you're not passionate about it. I don't get it. You know, oh, man, it was greater than more than 95% of the people I knew, you know, actually doing their engineering course. You know, like, most of them just didn't care.
Yeah.
I don't know why they were there.
I mean, that's why. I mean, there's an article in here. There's this actually pretty great, like, layout of from the Wall Street Journal about different careers and unemployment right now and median earnings and stuff. And if you look at engineering, I mean, it's not bad. I mean, at least I think this is
it's not a bad profession.
I was a little surprised.
That's some of the reason why they do it is because, their parents are happy because they're engineering, that sounds good. My kid's successful, you know. Or they might have friends that do it because they've heard it pays well or, I don't know.
Right.
I don't know. If you don't have a passion for it,
or how about this? Petroleum engineering, median earnings, $127,000. That's crazy.
I'm surprised it's that low.
Yeah.
There's big money in that.
That's median.
You know, mining out here in Australia, there's huge money. I could be earning $200,000 a year if I want to go, you know, actually wire up stuff in a mine or something like that.
Yikes.
There's big, huge money in it.
Yeah. The crazy thing about that, though, is like it's like so safety dependent, too. If you have people that are just in it for the money, do you think, I mean, do they care about safety at that point? I don't know. Maybe.
They'll cut corners.
I mean.
No, they take it very seriously.
Okay, well, that's good.
Well, in the seismic industry I was in, if you went on those seismic survey boats, right, you earned massive money. You would spend 3 months on the boat, and then you had three months off. You know, you'd have enough money to go and tour the world 5 times over during that 3 months, you know. You'd just
that's
make
crazy.
So much money. And,
that's crazy.
And you're not doing anything complex. You're doing something that's really blue-collar, you know, anyone can do it kind of thing.
Yeah, like industrial installations and stuff.
Yeah, you're just manually doing stuff, or you're doing TO, you know, really simple wiring.
What's TO?
Type.
What's TO?
Technical officer.
Oh, I've never heard of that.
Europe. Oh, yeah, that's what they're called here.
Okay.
TOs. Yeah, you're right. Okay. Technical officer.
Hmm. Yep. Yeah, and I mean, it's good money. I'm sure there's some challenges to it, but yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. Hmm. And a lot of the cases, you don't need any qualifications at all to do it. You just rock up and say, I want to go on a seismic survey boat. Fine, sign here, son. Slap on the back, off you go. Well, they'll put you through training and...
Wow.
Away you go. Oh, there's big money if you want to live dangerously. Yeah.
Oh, like a, yeah.
Oh, it's not, well, it can be dangerous. Well, it can be dangerous on those boats. You know, it's a shitty lifestyle. You're in the middle of the North Atlantic and you're rocking. That boat's rocking at 45 degrees 24 hours a day. And, you know, it's just, yeah.
No, thank you.
It's not a good life, so.
Yeah.
But you're paid well. Same with the mining. You know, it's pretty shit going down in the mines, I can imagine, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're paid handsomely for it. So if there's anyone out there that's doing stuff, making an absolute buttload of money that you can embarrass us with, please tell us.
If you were listening to the Amp Hour right now in a mine, let us know. Yeah, when you get out, of course.
Right.
You're probably not texting us from down there or anything. So,
but you'd need an intrinsically safe MP3 player.
Oh.
Because everything in the mine has to be intrinsically safe. You can buy a Fluke 87 potential. Meter that's intrinsically safe. I don't know how different it is to the standard one, but it just can't generate a spark to, you know, ignite explosive atmospheres and stuff like that. Huh. So, yes, there's a whole art in intrinsically safe stuff. So,
yes. Duct tape it.
Right, no, it's a bit more than that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
what's so this standard?
Oh, no, hang on. I want to talk about this. What's this? You found a report in Wired. Who's Pinoco? The CEO of Pinoco says.
Yeah, Pinoco, you could send them a 3D design and they'll laser cut it or 3D print it for you.
That's where I've heard of them. Okay. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, they say that circuit board printing is 24 months away.
That's what they say.
I call bullshit. Again, just like I did with the 3D chip maker.
No,
straight away,
I would say this is
smell bullshit. I don't even have to check into it. I just
no. I'd say this is closer. This is, I mean, basically what bullshit. You need to do at this point is have a way to lay down. Oh, sorry, my dog's going crazy.
You've got to lay down the conductive layers, and then you've got to build up the vias. Right,
the vias are really where it would be tough, and then plating those vias—that's the toughest part I see. I mean, you could etch boards right now. It's just all about plating the vias. So
and then making it all withstand, you know, 400 plus degree soldering temperatures, right?
So it doesn't delay. Yeah, like if you have multiple layers too. I think what they were talking about is, single layer conductor printing, you know, like a conductive ink pen could do right now. I mean, you could do that right now, right?
Of course you can do that. You can modify the head on a MakerBot to draw the lines with conductive ink.
I think that's probably what he was talking about.
You could have done that 30 years ago. Nothing new there.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's bullshit. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, maybe.
Not even worth mentioning.
I thought it was an interesting article. There's a couple... I don't know. 3D printing is definitely getting some more. There was two other New York Times articles about 3D printing this week. Mm-hmm. And so, I don't know. It's...
How hot do those 3D printer heads get? Because obviously, the heat, I think they're only like a couple of hundred degrees. So soldering temperatures are more than that. Or they can be potentially more than that. So really, you've got to use a material and a print head that is, you know, like say double a typical soldering temperature. Otherwise, your thing's just going to fall apart when you try and solder it. So
yeah, unless you mandate. Well, then Rojas would never work, right? Because you couldn't do that high temperature silver tin. Not that you'd go straight to Rojas with a printed circuit board or
board. It's just not going to work. So let's forget about it. All right.
Why don't they call them PCBs instead of ECBs? Wouldn't it be better to call them ECBs, like etched circuit boards?
Nobody ever calls it ECB.
I'm just saying, wouldn't it be a better thing to do? They don't really print it, they etch it.
Well, there's a... Well, you etch normal boards, right? As well.
Etch
You etch away the copper.
Right, yeah.
Actually, there's a lot of old-timers, right? There's a lot of old-timers that refuse to call them PCBs. They're printed wiring boards, son. When
printed
I was a boy,
board,
we
really?
Only made printed wiring boards. That's like their correct name, PWB. And don't you forget it, Sonny.
Doesn't roll off the tongue quite as well. Yeah.
No. But, there's a few old-timers out there I know who,
you know who you are.
Start a fight every time you
You're
call
probably not
PCB.
Listening to this.
Right. But yeah, anyway.
Coming through your gramophone, 23 Skidoo.
But apparently, technically, if you want to get into that's the correct term, printed wiring board, you know, I'll concede that possibly that is the original term. And right. Well, yep,
things
and it
change.
Was hijacked.
Things change.
Yeah, things yeah. change.
Yeah. How about a little history for those old timers out here? Although you'd
Jeez,
have to be really old.
The show's almost over already.
Yeah. Yeah.
No wonder yeah. we're all old.
Yeah, right? We just Time took flies. An hour of your life. One more bit before we sign off for our next hour of taking your life next week. 1887, that's what's crazy to me. It was the first dry cell battery was invented. Can you believe cool. batteries have been around for that long?
Yeah. Yeah, I can.
Really?
I knew they were around in the 1800s, of course.
Yeah, that's I always figured they just did it in jars, you know, with like you know,
right,
different electric.
Yeah, little Leyden jars or whatever they are.
Right, yeah.
Or is that a capacitor, a Leyden jar? I can't remember.
I don't know.
I'm going to embarrass myself there. Someone will correct me, I'm sure.
Yeah, someone will. Mm. Yeah. But yeah, 1887, these things have been around. So yeah. It was Carl Gassner got the first patent of a dry cell. So, and that was the first, and let's see. In 1896, so that was what, like 9 years later, was the first, 1898, was the first D-cell. So D-cells have been around for that same form factor, have been around for...
Is it exactly the same? Or have they tweaked
years.
It? Or have they actually tweaked it?
They say first D-cell. I mean, I assume
it's
the standard D-cell.
Yeah, well, I guess you've got to say it's a D-cell, right? Yeah.
Right.
Awesome. It's amazing.
115 years, man. That's crazy.
For one Crazy. Form factor, yeah, that's, yep, and it's still
that's
used.
Staying power right there. Although, I'm sure those batteries aren't in good shape. The first ones are probably not in very good shape these days.
Right, no, you wouldn't suspect so.
Yeah.
That's a very interesting bit of nerd history.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. And that was on the 15th was the day of the patent, not the 14th. It's this day in Dave's nerd history because today it's only the 14th here.
Right. No, right. What is it here? It's the 15th, is it?
Yeah.
Yes, it is, 15th.
November?
Yeah, November 2011,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm with it.
You are out of it.
Sorry, I'm concentrating on my throbbing thumb.
Oh.
Poor diddums.
All right,
you've got to get
some
sympathy from someone. Come on.
You won't. Maybe you will next week. I don't know.
Oh,
not for me. I wanted to remind people that we have an RSS feed. I don't know if people knew this. It is the best way to get a hold of the fact that we have a new post up, as opposed to I'm always furiously tweeting and Dave's always saying, just yep. leave it go.
Well, automatically tweet it. What are you talking about?
I know. I'm going to side with Dave.
But you want me to retweet it like 10 times so that people,
not
oh,
10
just
times,
in case
just once, please.
Time zone.
Yeah.
But
anyways,
that's spamming. If you do it more than once,
it's not
spamming.
If you do it once, do it one extra time, you're fine. If people do it for us too, that'd be great.
But then you start on that slippery slope. Oh, I'll just do it two extra times.
I'll
you
just
know?
Do it 7,000 times, yeah, one day. In an hour. See Alice.
Unbelievable.
So we have an RSS feed. We also have a Google Plus page if you're so inclined. They just open those up for businesses. We used to have one and it got shut down.
Have we got a Facebook page?
We have a Facebook page, we have a Google Plus page, and we have a bunch of people who passively follow us because we don't do much the rest of the week. So.
No, because we don't do anything on those channels as the Amp Hour because we have our own channels. So
yeah.
Where we tweet furiously all day, every day.
Yeah, sure, Dave.
Well, I don't Anyways, know, I'm up to like a couple of thousand tweets or something.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. It's getting up there.
I follow you. It's you're not. You're
yeah,
not too bad.
I follow you too. I see you popping up.
All right. Yeah. Well, if people want to follow us, Dave is EEV blog. I am Chris_Gamble. And yeah.
Why? Because you couldn't get Chris Gamble without the underscore.
I have both. It just we've talked about that before.
You're just an underscore man.
Yeah, I like space.
All right.
Need my space.
All
right,
was
guys.
Just Gamble on its own taken? Because Gamble
is
not a...
so taken. It's,
oh, right,
it's a
okay.
Scottish name. It's very Scottish.
Oh, right. Yeah. Oh, it's very... Right, so it's... Okay. I thought it was a bit more obscure.
It is if you're not Scottish.
Right. Okay. Got it. Yeah. All right. So well, that's all we got.
All right, guys. We'll talk to you next week.
See ya. Son of a bitch, this thumb hurts.
All right, all right. You baby.